south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. Hey, you longtime listeners might remember that before I got involved in this whole Latin American thing, 27 years ago now, I actually bought a house in a Caribbean island called Montserrat. Yeah, it was mighty young back then. Looking back, it was a kind of a dumb thing to do, but if you have little money when you're young, sometimes you do some really stupid things. At least I didn't buy a Ferrari. Anyway, I bought this beach house on a British protectorate island called Montserrat. It's right next to St. Kitts, Nevis, and an island called Antigua. Some people say Antigua. Not to be confused with Antigua, Guatemala, but it often is. You can look it up, called Antigua. Anyway, bought this place on Montserrat. The island only had about 50,000 people on it, rather small, but it was a British protectorate. And the subdivision I was in was all these retired British property types. In fact, that's who I bought the house from. A nice old British lady whose husband, a retired colonel, had Alzheimer's, and they were going back to the home country, back to the land of national health care, you know. Anyway, as for the British contingent on that island, most of them retired, almost all of them, a lot older than I was. Pure British, though. Upscale, ramrod, stiff upper lip and all that. Anyway, what was unique about that little island was that there was a spectacular recording studio, a one-of-a-kind place there called Air Studios. That's Air, A-I-R, Studios. Anyway, it was owned and operated by George Martin, Sir George Martin, the famous producer of the Beatles. And after them, a lot of other groups, too. Anyway, he was my neighbor. The reason why he had this studio, he told me, in this tiny island of only 50,000 people, was that the artists, the stars that came down and recorded, had total anonymity on that island. They could go anywhere, do anything, and no one screwed with them. No one cared. No one knew they were stars. No one recognized them. Because, you see, the total population, about 99% of the people on that island, and they were overwhelmingly black people, had no knowledge of, nor did they like, American or British rock and roll. Their music was reggae, punta, salsa, merengue, you know, island music. So George Martin could have all these super groups come down, like McCartney and Wings, the Rolling Stones, Badfinger, Peter Frampton, Elton John, Rod Stewart, Pink Floyd, the Eagles, you know, the big groups of the day. Because he knew when groups are in a studio recording, sometimes for weeks and months at a time, they'd appreciate the fact that they could get a lot of work done fast because on that island, no one would bother them. So they'd go into the little downtown, hang out at any of the pizza joints, restaurants, bars, discos. There weren't many of them, but a few. Saw quite a few celebrity musicians myself. They'd just be hanging out, no hangers-on, except for the ones they brought along. Believe me, there were no people gaping at them or hounding them for autographs, stuff like that. And really, it was kind of strange. For me, walking into the grocery store and running into someone like Ron Wood of the Rolling Stones, all hungover, pushing a cart through the bread aisle, or running into someone like Peter Frampton picking his nose on a street corner, or in my case, actually getting to go deep sea fishing with Mark Knopfler of Dire Straits. Not that it was planned, it was just that we both wanted to go. The boat was small, and the captain, Danny Sweeney, a black guy, a lot of black guys on that island with pure Irish names. Go figure, huh? Anyway, he didn't know Peter Frampton from Peter Pan or Mark Knopfler from Mark Wahlberg. So anyway, it was a very cool little place to hang out. And I had a really nice beach house there. Until the little inactive volcano there became quite active and completely destroyed the island. Everyone was evacuated and all the houses just covered in ash or leveled. Of course, being an American in an all-Brit subdivision, we all had insurance. But the reinsurance company went broke because there were just way too many claims, and none of us got a cent. Now, I wasn't there when it happened. I was up in Chicago, but after hearing and seeing what happened on the news, etc., after that, I just kind of abandoned the place. Never went back to even look at the rubble, as did probably 95% of all the people, the Brits and Americans, that had their houses ruined there. Oh, and Air Studios was completely destroyed too and never rebuilt. So that was part of my earlier past, one of the dumber moves I made. But who can predict that stuff, right? Which brings me to this unexpected email, which kind of ties into all that and has some lessons for Latin America too. It includes a cautionary tale about living in Mexico. And this one comes from expat Jean-Luc, another Canadian boy. He says, Johnny, what a small world. You know, you probably knew my grandfather, or he certainly knew you. Not for nothing was he known as Montserrat's ambassador. He knew every expat and welcomed most of them personally to that little island. On arrival, he gave each and every one a tour around the island. Oh, he loved and enjoyed every day of his own personal plan B down there, and did not like having to return to Canada after the volcano blew everything up. As a side note, he says, my grandfather was allowed back into Montserrat on a passport that had expired over 20 years before. Yep, he says things were different way back when, back in the 80s and 90s. Anyway, Johnny, he says, on to what I actually wanted to write you about. I've been spending winters south of the border, and boy, oh boy, have I seen Mexico change in these last 20 years. Trying way too hard to become like America with a K. It means it's time to head south of the border, as you always say. And believe me, Johnny, I'm working on it. And I'm sure countless other listeners are too. But first, Johnny, a suggestion. You know, we could use a condensed series on all the good, bad, the ugly, and the great of each particular Latin country, don't you think? It's so hard to piece them together from your own 800 shows, and I know you've hit on every one of them. Even for me, your most avid listener, maybe, it's hard for me to condense it all together. Now, I know you are partial towards Guatemala and would not want to live in Colombia, but it would really be cool if you could give us your basic pros and cons of individual countries as you know them. You know, kind of like a Johnny Latin country breakdown list, using any metric of your own choosing, say, starting with Mexico, being the closest to the States and the farthest north, and being the most obvious Latin country a gringo might visit first. Then you might want to work your way down the map and give us the highlights of each country as you see them and perceive them to be now and in the future. Then he says, you know, my experience is totally limited to Mexico, but I'd like to share this little boots on the ground story for you. It's a cop extortion story. And the thing is, Johnny, like I said, things have changed and you can't do what you could do. I mean, these days, if you try to play the dumb I don't know any Spanish gringo, it doesn't work anymore. Not in Mexico. In fact, only last spring, a fellow gringo snowbird from Canada rented a house in the Querétaro state for a couple of months. He was a guy who had lots of visitors, weekly and biweekly. He would pick them up from the Mexico City airport. A dumb gringo move if there ever was one. Say what you want about Mexico, Johnny, but they have private buses that make Greyhound buses in the States look like chicken buses. My neighbor should have taken one of those instead of driven. Because, you see, there's a permanent police trap just as you leave the airport. Everyone knows that. And my neighbor was caught in that thing over and over again. Probably weekly. Yep, weekly. What a dumbass, but hey, some people you just can't train. Anyway, the first time, he told me he paid 6,000 Mexican pesos because apparently, he said, they got me because my headlights weren't on. Yeah, right, meet Johnny here. Even though that probably every fifth car in Latin America, probably every third car, has missing or broken head or tail lights. And the cops never give a local a ticket for something like that. Or even a gringo, for that matter, as long as you're off the tourist trail. But we're not talking about off the trail here. We're talking about Mexico. Anyway, he goes on to say, 6,000 pesos because his headlights weren't on. Now, at 20 to 1, that makes around 300 U.S. bucks for that offense. Anyway, the next week, he didn't signal a lane change. At least that's what the cops said when they busted him. And then the following week, it was something else. Then again, and again. Eventually, my neighbor became on a first-name basis with the cop. And Fernando That was the cop's name. He gradually lowered the subsequent fines until, after a while, smiling ear to ear, he'd pull him over but charge nothing. He even invited my neighbor to his daughter's 15 años party. You know, that 15-year-old coming out party that's a big deal for young Latina adolescents. So my snowbird buddy got invited to that thing. After all, he paid for all or most of it anyway. Yeah, and you know, Johnny, my dumb gringo neighbor knew he was being taken by this guy from the start. And yeah, he tried playing that dumb gringo, but it's Mexico. It doesn't work here anymore. All right, me, Johnny, here again. The thing is, most of the cops in Mexico speak enough English to be able to nail you for mordida, you know, a bribe. But the ones that don't speak English, those are usually the ones out in the boonies, well, they've discovered Google Translate. So if you try pulling the stupid clueless gringo act, they'll pull out the smartphone and hit Google Translate. They got you there. You can't get away with playing a language dunce. Not anymore. Not in Mexico, anyway. Then John Luke says, if you play the dumb gringo in Mexico like this guy did, it won't work. But what if your primary language is not English? The thing is, he says the cops will use the speak/listen function on the Google Translate app. Even so, you'd think there'd be a workaround for that as far as a French Canadian would go. Just speak French to the cop and that should throw him for a loop, right? Well, not so fast. The frickin' cops have multi-language packs now on their Google Translate, so you can't even get away with that. Anyway, Johnny, he says, I've been coming to Mexico these past 20 years, and just about every single gringo I know who drives down has been nailed by the federales. And most will tell you they've had encounter after encounter after encounter, and every one of them costing some dough. But, Johnny, I never did. Is it luck or what? Well, until last spring. They pulled me over on the way to Dolores Hidalgo. They had not speed radar, but smartphones in hand. And you know, amazingly enough, I got out of that speeding slash robbery extortion attempt. So how'd I get out of it? Well, it's because they're lazy asses and they were dumb enough to camp out in the shade where the highway cuts into sort of a deep canyon. Turns out, to my great advantage, it was a cell phone dead zone. So they couldn't download the language pack that corresponds with my ID. That would be my driver's license I carry from a European country that doesn't speak English or French. Haha, dumbasses. The joke was on their dumb lard asses for sure. Okay, Johnny, there it is, and over and out for now. Gotta go back to binging on your podcasts. Keep them coming. And please consider that idea about countries one by one being analyzed in your own particular way. Signed, south of the border bound, Jean-Luc. All right, Jean-Luc, thanks for that. And I'm always looking for some fresh news about the cops and their ever-changing schemes to extort money out of gringos. Now, what you're reporting is what I've been hearing a lot lately from mostly gringo-wise Latin countries. Specifically, Panama, Costa Rica, Mexico, and parts of Ecuador and Colombia. Seems that where there are gringos, the cops are now tied into Google Translate and all those language packs for Google Translate he was talking about. But what about when you're off the gringo tourist trail? Well, occasionally I get pulled over at one of those roadside stops. In fact, I just got pulled over, I think it was a month ago. And I'm telling you, when you're off the gringo tourist trail, they are not whipping out the cell phones and looking up anything. Though we all know if butts were brains, the Kardashians would be geniuses. It's just as sure that lag time will kick in eventually, and even the cops way off the gringo tourist trail are going to have Google Translate, and you won't be able to play the dumb gringo anymore. Oh, and speaking of being on the road here in Latin America, Uber is everywhere now, even in countries they claim it's illegal to have Uber, like Argentina. Though, here's a tip. Just because you have an Uber driver, don't think he drives any better than any other crazy-ass driver here in Latin America. Though his car's likely to be in a lot better condition than your average taxi is. Yep, they can drive wickedly crazy just like everyone else. In fact, just the other day, I was in a nice, safe Uber. Yeah, right. And you know, even after more than 25 years down here, I can't imagine any human could design roads this badly. Seems like every Latin country somehow hired the same crew of monkeys and missing links to design, build, and maintain the roads. Though I understand every politician in Latin America has a one-eyed, syphilitic brother-in-law with a road construction company or two. Isn't that convenient? That said, here's a few examples on just how screwed up the road designs are. Turns out Latin American road designers, as dim-witted as they are totally obsessed with one-way streets. In fact, sometimes it seems as if there's nothing but one-way streets. At first glance, you might think there must be some rhyme or reason to it, that it really does help out the traffic flow. But you'd be wrong. Well, let me start by saying I've never been in a Latin American city where I haven't come across places where they've got four one-way streets going the same direction, all parallel to each other. That means if you want to go in the opposite direction, you got to drive four blocks through four different one-way streets to make the curve around and go the other way. Duh. Double duh. And because that's all so illogical, it does make a great case for the fact that Latino drivers will occasionally just say, "F*** it," and drive the wrong way down a one-way street. Which is scary as hell if you're going the right way and suddenly you're facing down one of these guys, you know, playing chicken. I've been there many times, and it's something gringos just never get used to. But where were we? Oh yeah, I'm riding in an Uber in a huge Latin American city. Just when the Uber guy gets about two blocks from my destination, he realizes where he's got to take me is the wrong way up a one-way street, and there's a series of one-way streets, as mentioned before, going in the wrong direction. So, in the moment, he just says, "F*** it." He gets on the one-way street, slams on the brakes, and goes in reverse down the one-way street till he ends up in front of my place. Are you getting this? It was like a James Bond movie. All this traffic going one way down this street, and he's going in reverse for two blocks. You want to know something? No one even bothered to lay on the horn. I'm sure they just figured, well, they've all done it before, so let he without sin be the first to lay on the horn. Meanwhile, my jaw's clenched, I've got my fingernails dug into his worn-out, threadbare upholstery. That's when you realize adrenaline is a pretty amazing thing. Oh, and by the way, you may have heard me mention this before. You better have your Waze all pumped up on your smartphone when you get in any car, be it your own, a friend's, a taxi, or an Uber. Because, you know, I can't tell you how many times I've had to get a taxi driver out of a jam. They don't even know their way around their own city sometimes. Makes you wonder how they got around before smartphones, you know, Google Maps and Waze. Oh, and for you longtime listeners who've heard me say that I won't give in and get a smartphone, I only use a dumb phone or a burner. Well, I do actually have now a kind of a smarter dumb phone, enough to let me install Waze and WhatsApp. Cost me around $35 or $40. Now, before you start calling me a hypocrite, gotta tell you, it's not in my name, and I've got no pictures or any kind of photos of myself at all on it. So I do have WhatsApp and Waze, but I'm way under the radar. Not to mention, I never go into my email on that smartphone, nor do I ever look up anything on Google. Not on that phone, nor on my own computer. I just do not use Google. I don't want to be tracked, filed, or archived, not by anyone. Now, you know, when you first get a phone and you set up a Waze or a WhatsApp account, you have to link it to an email, almost always a Gmail account. The trick here is, if you want to stay way off the radar, just hand the phone to the lady or guy you're buying it from in that little kiosk. Never go to one of the so-called official phone service stores. There are millions of little kiosks that'll do the same thing, and you can do things anonymously through them. Oh, they'll want an ID, of course, so hand them something photoshopped. And they'll want a Gmail or an email address to link the WhatsApp and the Waze, whatever. Tell them you don't have one, and would they set it up for you, and they'll do it all. Just take a walk for 10 or 15 minutes, come back, and it'll be all set up for you. No charge. Yep, the Gringo Advantage rides again. But remember, if you really want to stay anonymous, don't ever search with Google on that phone. Nor should you check out your own email addresses on that phone. And definitely, don't take photos of yourself with that phone. But you knew that already, right? Which brings us to this rather interesting question from a listener. He says, "Johnny, be prepared. If you rent a place in Latin America, I don't care where it is, count on the fact that your landlord will probably completely fail and abandon you. Not, of course, if he's a gringo landlord, then they have some standards. But generally, you'll be renting from a Latin person, Latin property owner. Of course, he'll promise you the world as you're signing the rental agreement, but don't expect any kind of immediate action at all. If your hot water's not working, you got a leaky sink, electrical problems, whatever. Meaning you better have some tools around the house because it ain't going to get done unless you do it yourself. Then he says, and don't think if you buy in or rent in a high-end, gringo-ized kind of subdivision that just because the houses look first world, you're going to get first world maintenance service out of your landlord. It ain't going to happen. Fact is, Johnny, after a couple of years, even the best-looking subdivision starts getting a little ratty around the edges. Maybe not outside, because they've got some tremendous gardeners here. Inside the units and in the common areas always seem to lose some luster and head down toward that Latin common denominator. As you mentioned before, Johnny, that means paint spills, grungy windows, loose tiles, burnt-out lights, insect colonies, funky smells. But again, I have to emphasize, I'm talking about common areas because you can do what you like in your own apartment. And being a gringo, at least I guess most of your listeners are gringo, if they have an apartment, they'll be maintaining gringo standards. It'll be gringo nice, unless they come from a trailer court. And he says, I don't care if your new landlord shows up in a brand new SUV with a couple of bodyguards. That's no guarantee at all he'll be there for you when the plumbing pipes break. And it's no guarantee at all he's got the kind of standards about details that you have. Fact is, Johnny, when you move into a brand new place, that is, you're the first one in, it's always nice. Nothing like fresh new everything to make you feel good about the place you're renting or buying. But it's up to you to keep it that way. Don't ever count on your landlord to keep it that way. In fact, Johnny, and you may have mentioned this before, did you know that when I signed my contract for my nice new apartment, I was the first one in too, and I'm in Roatan, Honduras. Well, the clauses in that agreement said me, not the landlord, was responsible for all the repairs, which is not at all the way it is or is supposed to be when you rent a place in the United States. And when I pointed that out to my lawyer, he said, that's the way it is in Latin countries. It's the renter who does all the repairs out of his own pocket, which is not to say you can't make a deal with the landlord at the time, say 50-50 on repairs, but again, don't count on him or her to come through, for example, if the washing machine breaks down. So, Johnny, I just wanted to fill in some of the blanks for your gringo listeners that may be coming down and wanting to sign a rental contract. And one last thing, your landlord will usually have a lawyer draw up that contract, and you'll pay something like $50 for that. And it seems you can't get out of that one either. I tried. Signed Alan, who's renting right now for a year in Roatan, Honduras. All right, speaking of renting in nice areas from Latin landlords who will let you down, let me read just this little piece of an email from Mark. He says, I've been living in a beautiful residential tower in Panama City. I thought it was great until I moved in to find out that the no-dog policy was not being enforced. So when I heard the occasional yiping dog, I went to the manager and said, you got to do something about that. The contract says no pets. He said, get this, that's no pets for renters. Owners can have pets because they own the place. And even though technically they probably shouldn't have them, we've got no control and can't enforce that rule. All right, so I lost the first battle. Then, here's something you'd never think about in a million years. You move into a nice residential tower. Man, they've got everything. A pool, jacuzzi, sauna, gym, fantastic rooftop lounge, except the elevator, or elevators, in my case too, have to eventually stop at every floor. And every time they do, you get that ding, or even ding-dong, whatever the case might be. And I'm talking about day and night. And I'm telling you, Johnny, there isn't a single place in my beautiful apartment that I don't hear that ding going off. I asked the manager if he could at least tone that thing down a bit. He said he'd see what he could do about it. A couple weeks went by, nothing. Asked him about it again, he said, nope, can't do. Or it was more like, won't do. Too much work, I'm thinking. Call the elevator company, have them come over, probably charge a fee for it too. Meanwhile, I'm getting more and more attuned to it. It's driving me nuts. But one weekday night, I went into the elevator, looking for where that frickin' sound was coming from. I just couldn't seem to locate it. But I did write down the elevator model, company, serial number, etc. Went to the internet, did some searching, and sure enough, I actually found a YouTube video. Man, they got everything on YouTube, enabling me to shut the damn thing off. Well, not actually me, but an electrician buddy of mine. So now that annoying ding only happens on the other floors, not mine. Seems no one cares that there's no ding. No one's the wiser. So, Johnny, that's my story and further proof. You must always assume your landlord will do nothing for you. It's all on your shoulders. That's my story, and until proven otherwise, I'm sticking with it. All right, Mark, good stuff, especially the thing about pets. Who'da thunk, huh? All right, before we end the show today, I'd like to remind you, got my upcoming Expat Insider Seminar. Starts Saturday, January 5th, 2019. Price includes 7 nights in deluxe hotels. We'll be staying part-time in Guatemala in the Altiplano. Perfect weather all year round. And we'll be hitting the beach in El Salvador. So, 2 countries this time, heavy on the fire hose treatment as usual. Repeat offenders, welcome. We've already got a few signed up already. And if you're coming down as a single and are looking to save more than a couple $100, we can hook you up with a same-gender roommate. Of course, here in Latin America, we don't have 63 genders like you have up in the States. Ask any Latino down here, he'll tell you they've got male, female, gay, lesbian, and that's about it. Thank God, Buddha, Krishna, whoever you want to thank for lag time, huh? So anyway, my next Expat Insider Seminar is around 2 months away. If you want to kill 2 birds with 1 stone, come down to the seminar and apply for your Guatemalan permanent or temporary residency. Now, if you're going for residency, you'll have to stay on an extra week after the seminar. But it'll also give you a chance to go on that great John Galt post-seminar trip. Man, I'll tell you, if you're looking for some business ideas, that's the way to go. The John Galt post-seminar trip will be going to Lake Atitlan, the most beautiful lake in the world. Plus, there'll be a lot of surprises in store, too. So, in effect, you've got 4 options. You can come just to the seminar. You can come to the seminar and apply for residency right afterwards. Or you can come to the seminar, take the John Galt trip, or you can come down just to the seminar and take some extra days to go exploring on your own. You can get all the info and sign-up details at thenewexpat.com. All one word, thenewexpat.com.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, you can schedule a one-on-one phone call with me. But first, download my free Plan B questionnaire at www.thenewexpat.com. Better yet, if you want to get your Plan B going from right up there in the States, just sign up for my 9-hour Expat Essentials course. Get the perfect Plan B blueprint by going to theexpatfiles.com/academy.